Welcome to Sex Unshackled. I am Becky Crepsley Fox, and this podcast is where sexuality and spirituality meet. Today on Sex Unshackled, I have Leanne Shawley with me. Leanne is a Brighton-based writer and performer. Often autobiographical, her work explores womanhood and sexuality through spoken word poetry, stand-up comedy, and storytelling. She's been featured on BBC Radio 3, BBC Radio 6 Music, Sky Arts, and has had work showcased at both the Institute of Contemporary Arts and the Vagina Museum. Her first one-woman show, Leanne Shawley, Nice Things, premiered last year, and recently she has created an anti-sexual harassment campaign with the Volks nightclub in Brighton. Leanne is also a friend of mine, and I'm delighted to have her here with me today.
Hello, Becky. I'm so pleased to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Yay. Leanne, can you share with the listeners what brought you to this work?
Yeah. Absolutely. So, as you said, I'm a writer and performer. My work does predominantly center around sexuality and womanhood. I think that I first started writing about sex because I just thought it was the most interesting thing that I could possibly imagine. Like, I was from a young age, I was just obsessed that there was this thing that was sex. And of course, I would want to write about that and read about that and listen about sex, because I can't think of anything more exciting, particularly as it's kind of, you know, taboo or rude. You know, it's like that makes it even more interesting. So I've always kind of like that. It's always been a thing. I think also in a world where we're quite removed from our humanity, and where we're kind of like quite isolated, having consensual sex is like one of the only things that we do that kind of taps into our us being really present, and us being present with another person, us or people, us connecting with people. If, you know, it's not necessarily making any money for anyone when you're having sex, so there's no kind of like, you know, it's just its own end. So that's really exciting. So that's kind of what I want to write about it. But obviously my experience, now I'm 31, and heterosexual, and my experience of kind of growing up through being a teenager and a young adult, and my experience of sex and sex with men gave me quite a lot of material, some funny, some harrowing. So that is what's kind of informed a lot of the work. Because although it's very exciting and there's so much to it, there's a lot of stuff to dig into. And the things that makes me the most happy is when I perform some of my work or someone reads my work, and it's predominantly women who then may come up to me and say, thank you so much for writing this. I've never heard anyone say this out loud before, which is like the best thing. And I think it kind of to show people that you're not alone in these feelings. This is not, you don't have to be isolated in this. I feel it as well, and I'm happy to talk about it, so we can like learn together. That's like the best thing ever. So yeah, so that's how I write so much of my stuff about sex.
And I think that's why so many people love what you write and what you perform, because it is so relatable. And I imagine the reason why it's so relatable is because it is based, at least some of it is based on your real life experiences.
Yeah, absolutely.
How does it feel to share some of these really like vulnerable and personal things to people?
Yeah. It feels absolutely fine and perfectly natural and like the right thing to do. I mean, like, I wrote the first monologue that I wrote was a monologue called Stains. I wrote it at drama school, and it actually then became my one woman show that you mentioned at the beginning. And it's about a lady who goes and sits in a cafe, and some semen falls out of her vagina, and it leaves a stain on the chair that she sits upon, Becky. That's what it's about. And I wrote it And I loved, and I thought, this is really, I, this is, this is, I, this is, I loved it. I was like, this is really good. This is, I really felt like I'd found something that I was good at. And actually, because I was training to be an actor, but the writing was like, oh, I really resonate with this. And so to be able to perform my own work was just like the perfect thing. And so I performed that a lot, you know, a few years ago. And it was, that was the first, that was my kind of first time and getting into this work. And it means that I perform it in front of, I mean, performing it in front of strangers is absolutely fine, they're strangers. But once I performed it at Bedford Fringe, which is where I'm from, the only slot they would give me was like 2 p.m. on a Thursday. And I was like, is it possible maybe to have an evening one? And they said no. And so I was like, okay, fine. And the only people in the audience was my mum and my friend Amelia, who directed the show. So that was me sat on a stool, just basically eyeballing my mum as the only audience member, along with my friend Amelia, bless them both, while I'm talking about the sensation of semen dribbling out of my vagina. And I suppose that is a bit bizarre, but but you do get over it, because I think that, yeah, I think it, but I it doesn't bother me, because I trust the work and I know it's really authentic and it's really truthful. And I think because predominantly my work is humorous, it kind of takes away any awkwardness because there is humor there. And generally my work will start with a lot of humor, and I try and, you know, really encouraged, because I was actually listening to Sarah Pascoe earlier talking about how she wanted to get into theatre and talk about all these really difficult topics that were really interesting and serious. And she was told that the best way to encourage people to listen to you is to make them laugh, and then they will listen. And basically that's kind of what I try and do often, and that's what I've done sort of in the past. So it makes it way less awkward, because we're all having a laugh, and it means I can talk about all sorts of rude stuff, and it really, yeah, it doesn't bother me at all, particularly if I feel like it's helping people, anyone in the crowd, if it's helping them, then perfect. I'm happy to do that. I'm happy to be the person talking about that.
What would you want people to go away feeling or thinking after listening to some of your work? Or what are some kind of pillars that are the groundwork underneath the things that you write about?
Well, like, I think, I mean, once I was a little bit sad when it was that monologue that I was talking about, I performed that, and there was some other work that I'd written that was performed, and a guy came up to me and went, oh, I love it, because it's just really crude. I love that. It's my humour, because it's crude. I love it. And that made me feel a bit sad, because I thought, it's not really about that. It's not, you know, that's not what it's about. But actually, he's the only person that's ever said that, whereas other people, what I really want is to create characters that are really authentic and real, so that when the audience are listening to them, they can see themselves in them and relate to them. And as I said, if these characters are having kind of issues that are a little bit uncomfortable, hopefully it can encourage the audience to feel less alone in the world in these things, particularly women who are feeling uncomfortable about certain stuff that isn't really talked about. You know, if we can communicate about that, that has to help. And with the I get great responses from men, like really good responses, and sometimes men come to me and say that it's changed the way that they've thought about some things, and obviously that is like amazing. I feel like that is proper change. It's, you know, in my experience of doing political theatre or political cabaret, or, you know, I lived in London for a while and I was on the sort of fringe scene doing that kind of thing. It's really easy to do work when you're singing to the converted. Like, was that the right metaphor? Singing to the choir?
I mean, it makes sense to me.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's easy to kind of stand on the stage and for us all to go, don't we all agree that this, you know, don't we all agree that white heterosexual cis men are a piece of shit? Yeah. And everyone's like, yeah. And it's like, yeah. I mean, that's a laugh. Don't get me wrong. It's a laugh, but we're not changing anything like that, because we're just all the same people thinking the same thing. Whereas, you know, if if people are able to listen, you know, if I'm kind of being funny and disarming and people are able to listen and kind of rethink their actions and rethink the way they look at the world because they're able to see it through the eyes of like a vulnerable young woman, then amazing. Like, that's brilliant. And I wrote a short story recently about a one night stand, and my partner said that he thought that young men should read that story, that young men should read that story. It'd be really, you know, he'd not thought about these things. He'd not thought about the way that he was, you know, he potentially could have come across or other, you know, so that's really, you know, that's like, yeah, this is all kind of the cool stuff. It's also cool to make people laugh as well. Don't get me wrong, but this is like the icing on the cake.
And I think that leads us really nicely into what I was thinking about to chat about next, which is the sexual harassment campaign. So for those of you who don't know, the Volx is a nightclub in the city where we live in Brighton. And I know that Leanne has created this anti-sexual harassment campaign, but I don't know that much about it. So how did it come about?
Yes, yeah, so I'm a student at the University of Brighton. I'm doing my master's in creative writing. Shout out to Brighton University. It's been amazing, by the way, and they're getting defunded and all my teachers are getting fired. So I just want to say that all the teachers have been absolutely wonderful, and they've literally have changing my life with how brilliant they are. That's sad. But anyway, on a bright note, this was a module called Communities of Practice, where they encourage us to go out into the community and use our writing to kind of like tackle an issue that will help our community. I really like going clubbing and I really like going to Volx. My partner's a promoter and a DJ, so he's there often and he works for them as well. So we knew there was issues. I don't know why I can't get any of my words out because it's simply too exciting, Becky. We knew. I just want to make sure I put it out there that this is not a Volx issue, basically. I didn't want it to sound like that. So we know that there's a nationwide issue where sexual harassment in nightclubs and in nighttime venues is just so prevalent. It happens all the time, so much so that it's not only expected, but it's kind of accepted, is what is written in some of the research that I've read. And through anecdotal evidence and my experiences in nighttime venues, my partner was like, this isn't really good enough. Like, he's a promoter of events, and you know, he's getting his female friends talk to him kind of after the event and say, this happened to me, and I got touched in this way, and I got grabbed in this way, and I was felt uncomfortable and I had to leave, you know. And it's just it's not good enough. And if we want to support people, support women in particular, to have freedom and to have a good time in these just in the same way that men can, we really need to do something about it. So that's why I wanted to like focus on an anti-sexual harassment campaign with Volx. So I created some posters, I created the wording on some posters, and a social media campaign. And the social media campaign was we were so surprised with the really good response that it got. Like, it got really, it was like, it's the most shared post that Volx has put out all year by like a lot. It got loads of likes and loads of comments, and basically we were just really pleased. And then these have become posters that have been put up in Volx. And what makes them just a little bit different, I hope, from maybe some other campaigns, is that the focus is around encouraging perpetrators of harassment to question their actions. I was really fed up of the onus being on women to stop the harassment, stop their own harassment, you know? And one of the things that really inspired me was actually an episode of Hollyoaks. Well, actually an episode of Hollyoaks via the medium of Gogglebox. the government are doing a campaign at the moment called The Enough Campaign. It's really good. The Home Office doing it. It's about empowering bystanders to step in when they see harassment. I think it's a great campaign. Oh, you might have seen posters around. I think it's really good. They worked with Hollyoaks and they created an episode called The Long Walk Home, which followed a girl, Maxine. She'd lost her phone, she'd lost her friends, and she's on her way home. Yeah. And I watched that on Gogglebox, them watching that. And there's a bit where she goes onto a bus and she sits on the top deck and it's completely empty and she's sat there, and then a guy comes up and he sits directly behind her. And obviously it's really scary. And some of the guys on Gogglebox, the brothers, one turns to his brother and goes, "Well, if that was me, I'd say, what are you doing? Isn't there anywhere else you can sit?" And then his brother turned to him and said, "Yeah, but you can say that. You're a man. That's you as a man."
That's it.
And I was like, that is the bet. Like, what Hollyoaks has done there is so good. Like, this is what I'm saying about, like, not preaching to the choir. This is like, that's probably another version of that metaphor.
Preaching to the converted. I
that's
think
it. Something like, yeah. Like, this is an actual example of making some, like, you know, some kind of form of art and actually encouraging people to question their actions and their privilege and their perspective. That was amazing. Like, that moved me so much. And that's what I want to do. So in this campaign, I've written some words that, like, that I hope will encourage the perpetrators of harassment to question their actions, basically.
And I think this is coming at such an important time where we collectively as a culture are really unpicking what consent is. And yeah, people are already starting to learn that consent isn't just, the lack of consent isn't just a no. Right, consent is much more than that. And I've just got up one of your posters up here, because so what Leanne has done is she's made these like five separate posters.
They're posters, they're images on social media, but they're posters actually up in the club. Yeah,
and each one has what would you call it?
So it just has. Yeah, it just has some words. I mean, I was calling them poems, but really they're words. They're words on the page. Hey, what's more powerful than words on the page, Becky?
And I'm just going to read one out now. And this one's really beautiful because Leanne, well, they're all beautiful, but this one is particularly beautiful because of the imagery, which I'll describe to you. So Leanne has written, "She is someone's sister," which she's then crossed out. "She is someone's daughter," which is crossed out, and then "she is someone," which is not crossed out. And I think this is what it's all about. It's about humanizing people. And I think sexual harassment happens because people are not caring enough about that other person. They are taking what they want. They are being greedy or selfish, or they are not seeing the other person as someone who deserves their own autonomy.
Yeah.
So writing it in this way, "she is someone," we're not basing that person's life upon who she is to other people. And I really like that you wrote "she's someone's sister, someone's daughter," because I think if I were to see this in other places, it would be in reference to a male relationship. Like, she is someone's wife, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. There are only a few words on the page, but they all are inspired by quite a lot of research that I had done. They sort of directly respond to the anecdotes anecdotes, is that just always good? No, not anecdotes, just the experiences. A lot of people think, like, oh, it's this joke thing. No, it's a direct response.
So.
No, right. Words are difficult, but are they? They're all tricky. They're direct responses to the experiences that either I've experienced or you know, people I've spoken to experience, probably both of us, and probably many times. So and often we have this thing where if, you know, we get asked, "Have you got a boyfriend?" And if you say yes, someone backs off. And if you say no, they don't back off. I mean, what the fuck? Which is why one of them, so some of them, they're designed to actually be put in the in the men's toilets above the urinal. That's where I had in mind all the time. You know, this is for men to read while they're doing a wee. This is what men, this is, you know, this is the audience. So one of them reads, if a man on the dance floor asked you if you had a boyfriend and you said no, that wouldn't give him the right to touch you without your consent. Please allow women the same freedom. You know, because I just wanted to directly head on kind of like respond to these things. And also this thing about enthusiastic consent, which I think, which you mentioned, which is a great term, enthusiastic consent. And one of them says enthusiastic consent, the presence of a yes, not just the absence of a no. Like, that is great. Like, this is, these are kind of, obviously consent in particularly in that setting, in a nightclub setting where it's dark and people are drunk and it's busy, it's, I understand that it's not just as simple as, do you want to have sex with me? Yes, great, I understand that. So, and I understand that it's complicated and sometimes it's a bit muddy. So to kind of promote this idea of enthusiastic consent, I think is, personally, I feel like that is the best way of going about ensuring that we're proactively making these decisions to, you know, to be with someone rather than just passively, you know, if someone's passively allowing that to happen, do they really want that to happen? And I also, one of them, I'm just going to read one more. We've nearly read all of them, yay. Becky. We've nearly gone through the whole lot. One of them is about, I'll read it. She might not want to tell you to stop because you're bigger than her. And the last time she said no, she was called a bitch and a tease, and she shouldn't flatter herself. If she's not actively saying yes, it's a no, and you should stop. I wanted to really focus on that as well, because I think it's very easy for people to go, well, you know, she didn't say stop. She mm-hmm. didn't say no. Like, she didn't say no. She could have said no. And that is like, that's really, it's complicated. It's difficult for people to say no when, you know, when, as I said in that poem, that people, then when the other person is bigger. And I also think that, I mean, I wanted to kind of tap into this idea. I think there's a bit of a myth that people who sexually harass, kind of in the ways that we've been chatting about, are like bad men who actively go out and do that, you know? They're probably the same bad men that push women into bushes, bad men. And I actually feel like, yes, unfortunately, I feel like there are a lot of people that do actively think that and do that. But often there are plenty of good men who don't really realize how their actions affect someone else. So having signs up in nightclubs that say, we have a zero tolerance policy to sexual harassment, or no sexual harassment, or this is a safe space, I don't think is very helpful. Because
I don't know they're doing sexual harassment.
They don't know they're doing, exactly. They don't know they're doing it. They don't know what behavior is acceptable and unacceptable. And unfortunately, it's a vicious circle. This is what I spoke about with Nina, who runs Cabaret. She's a promoter, runs a night here. There's this vicious circle. They don't know they're doing it. The women are accepting it because it happens so often and we're so tired and we're scared. So we accept it, they carry on doing it. It's just this vicious circle. So yeah, that zero tolerance is, you know, great, you have zero tolerance. What does that mean, you know? And I think that it's extremely complicated that in a kind of society where, I mean, I grew up feeling really validated by how much men found me attractive, how much men found me sexy. Like, that was, I grew up thinking that was the most important thing. So I don't, you know, that then it becomes complicated, because I think that,
yeah,
you know, it's difficult to say no when you believe that all your self-worth is about how much these men find you attractive because of various industries, because of the beauty industry, that profits the beauty industry so much to ensure that women feel insecure. Like, if every woman woke up tomorrow and felt happy with their body, imagine how many companies would go out of business. That's Dr. Gail Dines that said that, not me, but that's a good quote. But like, you know, the beauty industry, the porn industry, obviously, it just lends itself to women feeling really insecure, finding validation from men, men behaving in a way that's unacceptable, and it just being this vicious cycle. So, but I do want to also stress that it's not easy. Like, this is complicated. This is not sort of sexual harassment that's like in a Carry On film where men are slapping women on the bottom and we see it's bad. Like, it's asking a lot of men to be able to question their actions and to think about and be mindful of their behavior. That's a lot to be considerate about the other person and about their feelings and about their experiences. It's like a lot, particularly in a society that doesn't really support that. So I want to ensure that I'm not coming at it from a kind of aggressive way, because I understand that must be pretty difficult. So let's all like talk about it and just be, you know, be really human about it, and we'll talk about it so that we can make a safer space for everyone.
Exactly. And I think this is the communication, and it's the teaching that we have to do, both for, you know, anyone and everyone, especially the men, that is going to help stop this cycle. You know, it was my birthday last year. I was out with a group of friends, and one of my very good friends was like being chatted up by this guy. She was, you know, she was enjoying it for a while and they were flirting and everything was all good. He was very drunk, and he then started getting really, really persistent. Like, I'm going to come back with you. No, don't leave. Oh no, please don't go. Am I going to come back with you? Right. Yeah. 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 Like all this like badgering. Now my friend she's a very strong, headstrong, determined woman. She was like, no, every time. And clearly he was a nice guy. Clearly he was very drunk. But I was like, he cannot go around thinking that this is acceptable behavior. And I was saying this to my friend. And she was like, yeah, but I'm fine. I'm like, but it's not about you. You might be fine, but maybe the girl next week won't be. Maybe the girl next week is younger or doesn't feel safe enough to say no, or she's had trauma, so she really can't say no. I was like, I need to have a conversation with him now so that he knows that this behavior is not okay for the future person. And you know, I tried. He was very drunk. I don't know how much of it went in, but I'm sure he did not know that what he was doing was out of order. I'm 100% sure he didn't. But it was totally helpful.
Yeah, totally. No, that is totally like that. I mean, that example would be replicated a billion times over. It is so common, and you're so right. You know, your friend who was saying no, you know, was so headstrong, like great. But then the next person, you're right, might not be. And it is really hard to be that headstrong. We're tired. Like, we're really tired. We don't have time. It's really hard. And as I said, when everything is against us, you know, it's like, it's really, really hard. So like, yeah, I wanted to quote, there's a night called Party in Your Pants. Right. And they put something on their poster. It's Judy. I don't know her personally. I've looked at some of her stuff. It's amazing. Or maybe it's they. I'm not sure of the pronoun. Sorry, Judy, but they're wonderful. And it says, I've got it in really small writing. This is on the poster on their night. Mm-hmm. Got uneasy feels about someone? Let us know. Ejecting a creepy man won't ruin anyone's night. Ignoring one could ruin a woman's life. Mm. Which was like really, I thought that was so strong. Like, you know, that's so true. And I think that it's difficult. I think also there's some experience of like guys who are genuinely really lovely guys. Maybe they're like in their 30s or 40s or older, and I think they feel a bit guilty about ways that they've behaved in the past, because they've behaved in a way that they no longer think is right. And I think sometimes that makes them a bit defensive, and they, because of the shame they feel about that. But I would suggest that we all have behaved in ways that we don't like in the past. The whole idea is that we progress and we learn. There's no need to be, you don't need to be defensive or feel worried about that. Just take this now and become an ally, a strong ally of women and of everyone who is in who is not in this, not as dominant as you are in a sort of societal or even like physical sense. Become an ally of those people. Like, that's the really important thing to do. You know, don't worry about what you did when you were, well, I don't know, depends what you did, but don't worry too much about what you did when you were 17, you know, because we've all, you know, and also society's changed, you know, like, as I said, it really, the world that we're living in absolutely grooms all of this stuff out of us, you know, like, fuck's sake, like, people, you know, like, kids watching pornography where women are strangled constantly and just ejaculated in the fucking eyes, like, is just ridiculous. I can't believe that we're living in a society where if you type in sex, that's what you're seeing when you're like 8 years old and you've never experienced any sort of sex before and you think that's sex. I mean, what is going on? I can't believe that we're in a place where women mean so little that that's what's happening. So I do feel this sense of like anger and responsibility to protect women and also, I think with my writing, the key thing that I like to just bring it back around to the beginning is like, to be able to try and tap into points of views that haven't really been explored too much before, that's like, I think that's like the most helpful, that's kind of what I want to do, to be able to tap into that, because it's all very complicated. It's really complicated. It's difficult. So, I feel great empathy for all of us navigating all of this stuff, because but at the end of the day, if we do, it's all wonderful. We're all humans. We all connect, and we all can have great sex, and we all can love each other. So, wow, I've really got on. I didn't mean to get on a hippie soapbox there, Becky. I'm just gonna dance around with some flowers in my hair, teach the world to sing. But
You're exactly right. I think men are victims of the patriarchy too. And I work with a lot of men, and I can imagine some of them will be listening to this podcast, and some of them will be like, oh my God, how do I chat up a woman then? How do I do anything without it coming across as like harassing them or not being woke enough? How can I do these things? Like, what is enthusiastic consent? So I wonder if you could just share a little bit from your point of view, maybe what a person could do if they were to healthily chat up someone else, or what symptoms, signs they need to look out for.
I mean, it's a good question. I would say, number one, like that you don't have to, if you view everyone as humans, and I mainly mean women here, when you like when if you view women as human beings who have had lived experiences, and you educate yourself around that, and you have this understanding that I mean, obviously everyone's different, but the majority of women have been sexually assaulted at some point. That seems to be my experience. Everyone I know, myself has, everyone I know. So that's happened. We are living within this patriarchal society that is constantly pushing our insecurities. We're having that sort of time. Learn about that. L listen to us. And if you're a nice person and you're treating us like a human, I can't see why anything you're doing would be wrong. Like, I really can't. Like, and obviously on a sort of a more simplistic level, there's nothing wrong with literally asking for this enthusiastic consent. If you're nervous about this kind of stuff, and I totally understand why you would be. Like, I really do. I really do. So say it out loud, ask. You can always be like, I think, you're really attractive. I'd love to talk to you. Are you up for that? Do you want to talk to me? Oh no, okay, I'll go away then. Do you want to dance with me? No, okay, I'll go away there. And listen to the woman. If they say no, then it is a no, and you do have to fuck off. Like, you really do. It's a no. This idea, this blurred lines, Robin Thicke blurred lines thing, is just, you just have to listen. There's this hard, it's not, there's no hard to get. Don't think about the hard to get. Like, that's just all bullshit. Like, if she says no, it's a no. If she didn't mean it, if she decides it's not a no, she'll come and find you. So there's no need to persist, So just treat people as humans. And I would just suggest about speaking, because I understand that it can be difficult. When I first started to write some of these poems, I was actually trying to look up what are the like physical signs of enthusiastic consent, i.e. nodding and eye contact, and doing these things, and maybe if people aren't looking at you, and if people are moving away, that shows that they don't want you to, and then I shared some of that with my class, actually, and my class were like, yeah, but some people never make eye contact, or some people make loads of eye contact because they're nervous. So it's that, I think that's kind of not a one size fits all. And I understand that's quite difficult, because I understand it's quite difficult to pick up social cues anyway. So I do get that. I do get that. But obviously that's helpful. You know, if someone's trying to move away from you and isn't looking at you and isn't engaging with you, that's probably not a great sign. But yeah, I would just suggest saying everything out loud. And then if it's a no, fucking off and having a nice drink elsewhere. Like that's literally it. That would be it.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I'm aware we're running out of time. So yeah. I would really love it if you, would you feel comfortable sharing some of your poetry with us?
Yeah, I would love to. Yeah. Thank you, Becky. Yeah, I'd love to. I'll share it. So I've written a recent poem inspired by all of this campaign. And I just also want to shout out Volks. So as I said, the Volks have allowed us to, I went to the Volks with this campaign, and they were really gracious, and they wanted to, put it all through their social media, put all these posters up. And not all nightclubs would be like that. I know that there's been some in the past where people have done some campaigns kind of similar, and they've approached nightclubs with these great posters. They're really good. And the nightclubs have all said no, because they don't want to insinuate that mm-hmm. people are getting sexually harassed in their nightclub, which is absolutely ridiculous. In any nighttime venue, this is going on across the country. Mm-hmm. It's happening. It's a nationwide problem. Yeah. And to not talk about it is doing a huge disservice to everyone. You know, like you said, the patriarchy hurts men just as much as it hurts women. Or it certainly hurts them. maybe not just as much. So, you know, to be able to, you know, so just to ignore it is terrible. So the fact that Volks are pushing this and giving and listening to women, elevating their voices, is extremely empowering anyway. And I've said to my partner, actually, when we put this thing on social media and it went really well, I don't know what counts as viral, Becky, but it got a lot of, I'm gonna say it went viral. It was pretty good. And he was like, yeah, this is great, but it's not enough. You know, this is just an Instagram post. You know, this isn't gonna, you know, hopefully it will stop stuff, but it's not enough. We've got to do more. And I was like, you don't, listen, Ashton, you don't understand. The fact that Volks have decided to use some of their space, their social media space, to put women's voices there, listening to them and elevating them, is so incredibly empowering and really helps. So obviously there's so much more to do, but don't discredit that just by allowing space for that, just shows us that you care, and that we mean something, and that the time, you know, the good times that women have in the club is just as important as men. So I just want to big up Volks.
Yeah, amazing. And
great. Is that so? Like great. Like so. Yeah. So this, inspired by all of that, I normally do poems that are a bit more humorous, but this, you know, hey, this has got a little bit of humor, but not really, because it is about sexual harassment. Becky, you've got to deal with the material, haven't you? Really.
Yeah, exactly.
So this poem is called Dancing Queen. Young, sweet, 17 minutes past four, no one moving near the front door, only to the back for a vape and a chat. And I like your makeup. How'd you get it like that? Euphoria rising, in her lips prizing, a triple melon lost Mary. Twinkling feet, she's a lycra covered fairy. Glimmering around, unbound, moving legs and hips to the sound of 160 beats per minute, minced through a sound system that is sure to eventually one day give everyone tinnitus. But ringing ears are for her fated future self, who for now bears no interest. It's all heaven, rest and digest. Wicked, wicked. Jungle is massive, and just for tonight she can afford to be passive, melting into the present where her eyeline is filled with interesting strangers, buffered by trusted mates dotted about, crowd permeated with sparkly clout, her hands free, winter coat stowed away, bum bag keeping her things at bay. What a difference from her usual rucksack and her usual jeans and her usual five-step skincare regime. Her usual polite emails and default tight chest, usual aversion to dark spaces and places in which the imbalance is so striking and there are so many men. What a difference from the constant contouring and the trips to Tesco Express with her purple fluffy keys wedged between her futile fingers. What a difference from the usual pandering, the balancing of integrity and safety, of truth and ease, of being honest and not bruising egos belonging to people with stronger hands and louder voices. What a difference from the usual exhaustion, the bleeding, pleading for a voice, ensuring that she remain young and thin, a schoolgirl with a sexual deviant within, not to paint herself as too desperate or too naggy, her words laggy so she can think through all the calculations, her relations with boys thoroughly considered and analysed, risk assessments completed, no history deleted, the actions rated so that all possible hazards are mitigated, because it's happened to her before, and it happened to her friend, 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 and now there are no friends left without a knowing look in their eye every time their mate lets out a sigh to imply that all of their worth must be inconsequential because it happened again. But tonight, there should be no need for fight or flight. See that girl, watch that scene, digging the fully liberated queen whose tambourine is replaced by bass lines and heavily syncopated percussive loops. And in an ocean of blokes, she not only dances on the shore, but runs headfirst into a breakbeat abyss, splashing her limbs and surrendering her body to the salt water, which comfortably lifts her towards the coming up sun. And if you dare, push yourself into her space, in between her eardrums and the bass. If, like a cumbersome vacuum cleaner, you place yourself next to her radiance, I would politely ask you to move. Thank you.
Damn. I had shivers. I was nodding my head. I was feeling all the things. That was incredible. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me today. Where can the listeners find you?
You're so welcome. So probably the best place to find me is on Instagram, at Leanne Shawley. I said to Becky earlier that I'm making a website, but not quite. But the link to that website will be on that Instagram. So go to the Instagram and then you can find me. And some of my poetry performances and stuff are on there. And if I ever perform, you know, live, that was where I will put that. So Instagram all the way. Amazing. Thank you so much for having me, Becky. This has been great. Thank you.
You're so welcome. It's been amazing. I'm going to post that on the show notes page. And yeah, I'll see you soon.
Thank you. Bye, Becky.